despite yesterday's confirmation from USDA that the corn and soybean crops are running well behind the normal pace of development, corn and soybean futures are giving back yesterday's gains. Livestock prices are under pressure, equities are under pressure, and the Fed is getting ready to meet starting today.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with, Chris Naranian from International FC Snow, and I've got the wrong copy here in front of me. Then Professor Pat Westhoff from FAPRI joins us, and right after the news, of course it's Mike Opperman from Farm Journal's Milk. Why else would there be cows here? I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorrie.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Yes, Chris Naranian.
I always have trouble saying his name, but
that's
heck,
okay,
we're sure glad to have him on.
It looks exactly as you said it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've decided to make it simpler for me and just Naranian.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's actually right or not, but I really don't care. I mean, the Wall Street Cowboy is going to be on AgriTalk, and we're gonna talk about what to expect from the Fed. And I wonder, the way that these markets are trading, when you look at the energies, when you look at the ag commodities, grains and meats, when you look at equities, if there isn't some anxiety over this Fed meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might have something to do with the way that the markets are trading today. So
okay.
We'll see what Chris thinks. Number one, we got to find out what Chris is thinking the Fed is going to do.
Right. It sounds like the general thought is maybe the lower 25 basis points.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where people's heads are at generally?
Well, I think when you look at the Fed fund futures, that's fully anticipated. And there's an outside chance that we could even get a 50. Is what the Fed fund futures suggest.
Okay.
But we'll get Chris's take on it and see what he thinks the Fed should be doing. You know, Chris has been dealing with finance in the ag industry for quite some time, and he's taken his skills over to INTLFC Stone now. So it'll be interesting to have a conversation with him. And Pat Westhoff, it's always good to talk with Pat. He's got some thoughts on just exactly how much impact the trade war with China has had on bean prices. And we'll have a conversation with Pat about that here coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'm going to run down some of these numbers from USDA's crop condition report yesterday. It does seem like we should have some strength, but we're lower across the grains.
Yep.
Corn, beans, wheat, everybody.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So,
all right. Well,
it was kind of a tough report, if you ask me.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah. All right, let's get to it.
Well, yeah, according to USDA, 58% of the U.S. corn crop is in good to excellent condition, up 1% from last week, but still 14% behind the same week last year. The agency also said 58% of the crop is silking, well behind the five-year average of 83% silking for this week. 54% of U.S. soybeans, good to excellent, unchanged from last week, and 16% behind a year ago. 57% are blooming, 21% setting pods. Both of those benchmarks are well behind average. 75% of the winter wheat crop is harvested compared to 86% on average, and 73% of the nation's spring wheat crop is called good to excellent. That's 11 percentage points behind average. Meanwhile, Chip, 64% of U.S. pasture and rangeland is in good to excellent condition. That's up 2% on the week and 23% above year ago. I guess there's your bright spot in the crop condition report.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You look at the departure from normal on rainfall, and it is that rangeland that has been picking up some good, better than normal rains through July. So that's having an impact on this cattle market. I don't think there's any question about it. You run those calves out there and let them get big on grass.
You betcha. Oh, they're delicious, that. that way, too. The American Farm Bureau Federation is encouraging progress in trade talks with China. AFBF President Zippy Duval said in a statement, quote, "We wholly support the administration's efforts to stop unfair trade practices by China. Now it's time to write the next chapter in our trade relationship by eliminating tariff barriers." U.S. and Chinese negotiators will be wrapping up this week's talks in Shanghai later today. Reports suggest the main goal of the conversations this week are to keep tensions from escalating further. On Twitter, President Trump took something of a provocative tone, chiding, quote, "China is doing very badly. Worst year in 27. Was supposed to start buying our agricultural product now. No signs they are doing so. That is the problem with China. They just don't come through." The president also suggested Beijing is waiting to see the results of the 2020 presidential election, saying a Democrat would give the country away if elected, Chip.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, be poking a tiger like that.
Right, right.
I just don't know.
We're at the table. Let's just talk, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see if we can work it out.
And especially if these talks are to keep the tensions from escalating further.
Yes, right.
Ah, goodness.
All right.
What else?
Well, you'll love this. Environmental Protection Agency Director Andrew Wheeler says decisions on small refinery waivers for fiscal 2018 should be finalized within the next few weeks. EPA has received recommendations from the Department of Energy, and data shows of the 40 requests made, 38 remain eligible for the exemptions. There has been no fresh talk of reallocation. And finally, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin has said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has committed to a vote on USMCA by October. The Trump administration has asked the Speaker to move forward with a vote on the measure as a side agreement to the budget deal. But thus far, Speaker Pelosi has refused to put pen to paper. Mnuchin maintains Speaker Pelosi did make a verbal agreement to bring the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement up for a House vote by October. Chip, that's something she denies.
Surprise, surprise. Oh, they're loose.
There they are.
Let's get him going here. Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How are you?
Hey, Chip. How are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. 20 cents. 20 cents per hundredweight on the market facilitation program payment. What do you think of that?
Well, that'll get you a cup of coffee in most places. But,
right.
So it's a nice start. But certainly, you know, there's that statement. You know, everybody keeps saying trade versus aid.
Yep.
And that certainly is the case in the dairy industry. If you look at some of the industry reaction to the 20 cent 100 feet payment through MFP, you know, a National Milk says basically the same thing. You know, dairy farmers, they project, have lost about $2.5 billion since the tariffs were put in place a little over a year ago. So 20 cents per hundred weight is a step in the right direction. But you know, there's a long ways to go before we make up any of that lost trade, that's for sure.
Yeah, 20 cents a hundredweight, it'd take a heck of a herd to get to that $250,000 pay cap.
I'm a journalist. I'm not good in math, and I was trying to do some math on that. And, yeah. It takes a pretty good to hit that, what is it, $500,000 cap?
For a couple, yeah.
Yeah, that it takes a pretty good-sized herd to be able to do that, to make that at least hit the cap anyway. So
yeah,
certainly you can get some payments from corn and soybeans and things like that, but yeah, it's a step in the right direction, but certainly
you know,
there's long ways to go.
And if Undersecretary Bill Northey was sitting next to me, he'd be probably punching me in the shoulder saying, hey, don't forget, we're also doing a food purchase program that's going to include some dairy products.
Right. Yeah, and that'll help. You know, any time we can get rid of some of that surplus, that's great. But we've got a ways to go. But sign up started yesterday, so folks should get on board.
Yep, sign up started yesterday. It's 20 cents a hundredweight. You know, if it's there, you better get signed up.
Yeah, better take it.
That's right. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you later. Yeah. That is Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Coming up next, we've got Chris Narayanan from INTL FC Stone right here on AgriTalk.
Built over generations, the dairy is what gets you up in the morning and sometimes keeps you up at night. To say you're invested is an understatement. Merck Animal Health Brands have a 50-year history of providing the products dairy herds need to stay healthy. With innovation, passion, and integrity, we'll do what's right for your operation and for you. This is why Merck Animal Health works. Visit MAHcattle.com to see how Merck Animal Health can work for you.
What do you call someone who studies the weather, a climatologist. What do you call someone who evaluates investments? A financial analyst. A person who studies DNA? A geneticist. A person who owns their own business? An entrepreneur. Who researches markets? An economist. And who handles employees? An HR manager. Someone who keeps devices up to date? A software technician. Someone who does business internationally? A global trader. Someone who transfers assets from one generation to the next? An estate planner. And someone who does all these things, you call them a farmer. Because being a farmer is the one job that requires dozens of other jobs. And at Pioneer, we're proud that our job is to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on Earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.
Attention, Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. If you use dual-ended combat arms earplugs and suffer hearing loss or tinnitus, you may be entitled to compensation. The manufacturer agreed to pay millions to settle allegations it sold defective earplugs to the military that were standard issue to soldiers deployed between 2003 and 2015. If you served during those years, were issued combat arms earplugs, and suffer from hearing loss or tinnitus, call now.
Call 800-820-1659. That's 800-820-1659.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
The 2019 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour is coming soon. Kicking off August 19th, watch for extensive coverage on air and online. The premier sponsor of Crop Tour is Pioneer, with support from IBM, RCIS, RAM, AeroVironment, Titan Tires, and Farm Credit Services of America.
Well, I grew up in one of them old farm towns where they hit it hard till the sun goes down.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hey, ho.
Yeah. The Federal Open Market Committee meeting is one of the regular meetings of the Federal Reserve, where they get together, set interest rate policy, monetary policy, and try to react, I guess is the best way to say it, try to react to what to the signals that the economy is giving them. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're getting together, meeting today and tomorrow, and we need to know what to expect from it. We're going to talk now with Chris Narayanan. Chris is the Managing Director, Debt Capital Markets for INTLFC Stone. Chris, it's good to talk with you again. How are you today, bud?
Morning, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, yes, yes. So tell me about this gig at INTLFC Stone. What's going on there?
So INTLFC Stone has had a huge footprint in the commodity markets, all up and down the supply chain, ag, energy, metals, and we also offer on-desk equity derivatives, prime brokerage, and so they brought me on to start a capital markets practice where we help our customers raise capital through private investors, help them restructure, refinance, all of that, and basically act as their financial advisor.
Cool. This is what you do, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of macroeconomics involved, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, when we're looking at, some of my guys on the broker side, they're looking to hedge and they're looking, a couple months out or whatever, but yeah. What we're doing, we have to take a much longer term view and say, okay, what's going to be the best way to situate a company so they're going to be a going concern, for several years.
Right. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Okay, we got the FOMC meeting today, tomorrow. What should we expect from this, Chris?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that the Fed will cut rates. You know, looking at my screen right now, the market's pricing in about an 81% chance of a quarter basis point cut, another 19% chance of 50 basis points. I don't see anything that would suggest that the Fed is going to go the other way. However, having said that, in my personal opinion, I don't know that they need to. The American economy is actually doing pretty well. We saw more consumer numbers coming out today on the back of last week's numbers. The consumer is still in a very healthy position. If you looked at last week's numbers, if you stripped out everything else from GDP and just looked at the consumer number, we're growing almost 3%. Inflation is pretty tame right now, and that's one of the things that the Fed has been really wrestling with. We're not seeing the inflation. So if they do cut, I think it's going to be really because of concerns about what's going on in the overseas in the global economy. You know, Japan has been stagnant for years. Europe is heading that way as well. You have negative interest rates in a lot of areas. And so it's really more of a fear that that might come over stateside and start affecting our growth.
Right, right. You know, the economy is doing well, Chris, and it seems to me that the Fed is looking at that inflation number, like you said, it's tame, but they're looking at that inflation number and trying to put some velocity behind the money supply that we've got out there. And I don't know if lower interest rates will increase the demand for money or not, Chris, because interest rates seem to be fairly manageable where they're at.
Well, and that's the million-dollar question. I mean, certainly on the, you know, when you look at GDP, you've got consumer spending, you've got government, you've got business investment, and then you've got your net exports, exports minus imports. And you know, on the business side of things, you know, certainly, you know, looking at the trade war and what's going on overseas, a lot of these companies obviously operate in several different countries. It's not just in the U.S. So when they're making their investment decision, it's not necessarily just on the U.S., but what's going on around the world,
yeah.
Right? So at the end of the day, you know, a cut here, you know, may not really do much for the United States, but it could, you know, cause them to maybe shift operations or shift their strategy a little bit and say, hey, you know what we're losing in one area, we might be able to make up somewhere else.
Yeah, it's an effort to be competitive with other countries in attracting that investment and that business. Okay, I got it. What kind of an impact does this have on our currency trade then, Chris?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Chip. I mean, we're seeing a very strong dollar right now. You know, if you kept everything else equal, if the price of money gets cheaper, more people will buy it, and you'll see more support on the dollar and keeping that strong. However, if you're not seeing the investments that are coming along with it, then you could see a weaker dollar at some point. But you know, again, I don't see anything here. I think it's just really, like you said, keeping the markets competitive, and so for companies and consumers to basically find the, you know, the lowest cost but highest quality goods that they can find, and looking at the different crosses between the currencies and say, okay, where do we go to get that? Obviously, right. There's going to be a give and take at some point, but there, you know, that's the way, you know, strategic decisions are made.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to do at least one what if with you. What if the Fed decides, I'm going to snub my nose at President Trump and we're going to hold interest rates steady?
I love that question. Well, I mean, I think the one thing that everybody's looking at, and I would agree, is that you'll see the equity markets, the stock market come down. I've not calculated how much that could be. I guess it depends on how long, you know, what their language is. If the market thinks that they're going to, you know, we're not going to do it now, but we'll do it at the next meeting, or at least give an indication that it's on the table. But here's the thing, Chip. You got to realize, you know, a lot of people use the stock market and the economy interchangeably, and I'm not saying that they're not related. They are related for sure.
Yeah.
But when you look at a price of a stock, it's the present value of future expectations, whether that's book value, earnings, you know, any of that, right? And so as these things change, you know, those expectations are going to change, and it'll be reflected in the, you know, in the price of the stock. It doesn't right. necessarily mean that the company is not doing well or the market as a whole is not doing well. It's just a reset of the expectations. It's no different than, you know, if we had, you know, perfect weather, you know, between now and plant and harvest, you know, what expectations people will have on the crop, right? And that'll be right. different than what it was 3 months ago, right? And right. so, so that's the thing that people have to realize, because if you do keep interest rates here, then people have to say, okay, well, their interest costs, their cash flows will be affected. It'll change, you know, it maybe not come down as much. So all of a sudden we have to reset our expectations. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the economy is going to be, just because you see a hit on the stock market, that it's going to, everything is just falling apart.
Right, right. You know, this credit market is an interesting market, because right now they're kind of competing with the federal government. And you got a $14.5 billion MFP that's going to roll out over time. Half of that looks like it's going to start to roll out to farmers by the end of August, early September. $7.25 billion coming into the ag industry, Chris. That's an injection of cash. That's got to help this industry out.
Well, I would think so. I mean, you've got people, you know, that follow it more closely than I do, but just, you know, kind of off the cuff, you know, when people have more money, they have more options, whether that's paying down debt, or, you know, getting, you know, making further investments, looking ahead next couple of years and saying, okay, you know what, this payment that we weren't expecting is now here. What's the best use of that capital, right? And, right. you know, when we work with our clients and looking at, you know, raising capital for them, you know, whether that's debt or equity or something in between, you know, one of the things that we really hone in on is, what is that use of capital going to be? And more importantly, what is that, you know, how is that use going to be beneficial to you? So I think, yeah, absolutely. You know, when you see capital coming in, you know, whether it's through MFP or otherwise, you know, people need to make the decision, work with their advisors and say, hey, what's the best use for this?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Chris, I can't believe that we're running out of time here. I've only got about a minute left for this. What needs to happen? Is it the trade issues? Is that the number one thing that we need to get over to help this economy, the ag economy, move forward?
Well, I mean, trade is part of it. I think sometimes it gets a little bit more attention than it deserves. I mean, you look at what's going on in China with the with African swine fever and how that herd has just been decimated, right? And, you know, they, you know, when you look at the Chinese investment over the last decade, it's not just soybeans or not just meal or not just hog producers. It's everything, right? Because ultimately they need the meat. And so what are they going to do? And they look at pulling different levers, right? So I think, you know, obviously the trade will, you know, slow some of that stuff down. Are they going to be able to source from Brazil or elsewhere? And then where does the U.S. supply go? And that's whether we're talking hogs or beans or whatever. Right. But what else, you know, what else are we going to look at? And so I think you just have to kind of look at it in a whole to get it all, kind of figure out that equation.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Chris, let's do this more often, okay, man?
Absolutely. You can call me anytime.
Good deal. Good deal. Thank you, Chris. That is Chris Narayanan, Managing Director for the Debt Capital Markets at INTLFC Stone. All right, coming up next, we've got Pat Westhoff, University of Missouri, FAPRI.
Sweet strawberry icing. You're in Goodwill, and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. That's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Machinery Pete's having a huge summer unreserved online dealer auction in conjunction with Big Iron. Visit machinerypete.com/auction to start bidding now. Find that piece of equipment you've been looking for. Get yourself a great deal. Go to machinerypete.com/auction to see what's for sale. Every piece of equipment sells absolute. This is one auction you can't miss. Items are open for bidding now and close August 1st. Go to machinerypete.com/auction. Unreserved, lien free, no buyer.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. Jeff had a little bit of strength in the grains yesterday, giving it back today.
although we're off the lows. We've gained back half the losses in the beans. The corn did hold key technical support this morning in the December contract at 420. The beans I'm most surprised about. I mean, they had the beans on the ropes, and we went to the lowest since mid-June, and now we're 6 cents off the low. So the markets are, it's a long time until we get to August 12th, and there's going to be a lot of vibrations, and there's going to be a lot of, positioning, and right now the crops are okay. There's no major threatening weather out there that would get people to come in and buy, but we still have no clue really what the acreage is going to be or what the final yields are going to be.
Yeah, that August 12 reference that he's making there, everybody, is the USDA crop production report for corn, soybeans, and supply and demand report that we're going to get that day. Over in the livestock trade, feeder cattle were lower early. They're trying to come off the lows like the beans are.
Yeah, I think that feeders are, to a certain extent, following in reverse direction the corn market. So the corn's a little bit weaker than the beans. But the fat cattle are still weaker here today, despite having the beef up another dollar yesterday. I think there's still some concerns. We got some supplies still ahead of us, in front of us. And the pigs, of course, they're following through on sharply lower to limit losses yesterday, despite the cash market jumping $3 yesterday.
Yeah, got that cash market loss that we saw on Friday. We got it back yesterday. That was a good thing. Thank you, Jeff. That's Pearl Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip Lorre, got Davis Michelson with me.
Yeah,
and
Wilson.
You like that one, do you?
I do. That just makes me giggle. Thank you for doing that. All right, let's continue the economic discussion, shall we, Davis?
Okay,
and bring in Dr. Pat Westhoff from the University of Missouri. He's the director of the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute, better known, at least in my mind, as FAPRI. Dr. Westhoff, thank you so much for making time for us.
Good morning, Chip. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, what triggered the call to get you on was just a series of three tweets that you did, I think it was last week, early last week, talking about what the impact of the tariffs on our bean market. And I thought there were some real interesting takes that you had on this, Pat, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. When you were putting that presentation together, what were some of the results that you came to as far as the overall impact of the trade issues with China?
So I think a lot of our results probably are consistent with everybody's common sense. When you put tariffs on U.S. soybeans going into China, it results in less U.S. exports to China, obviously, more exports by Brazil and other competitors, and reduces U.S. market prices. So we definitely confirmed all those directions of effects that most people would have expected. We also think it's probably pretty conventional wisdom that the result is that you get a significant increase in U.S. exports of soybeans to other markets when those tariffs are in effect. So we lose in China, we gain part of that back in other countries, but definitely have a net loss in trade overall. Yeah. Our estimated price impacts are something like 9% on the price of corn, or soybeans, I should say, so about 78 cents a bushel relative to our baseline. And that results in something like a $4 billion change in net farm income.
Wow, $4 billion. And here we've got 7.25 coming in the first tranche of the MFP payment. I want to circle back to one of the change in trade flows with China, right, looking to South America and the impact that it has on Brazilian producers there. Their eyes have got to be lighting up with profit potential, right, Pat? I mean, it's right, just got to be, let's get after this and grow more beans.
Yeah, we certainly had a period, especially last fall, where U.S. prices were at a very deep discount to Brazilian prices. So I kept prices there higher than they would have been. Therefore, results in more soybean production in Brazil.
Yeah, and it's a long-term shift, isn't it?
It can be. One thing that is interesting is that those prices in the U.S. and Brazil have come back together again since the end of last year. We'll see what happens in front of us. I think part of the story is what happened is that overall demand in China has been depressed so much by African swine fever that we can rearrange trade a little bit differently than we might have guessed.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Narayanan from INTL FC Stone mentioned it. Rabobank has got a new study out that is focused on the impacts of ASF. And there are some concerns out there, Dr. Westhoff, that we could lose up to half of the Chinese sow herd. Have you heard that one?
I've heard those numbers. I don't pretend to know what's happening on the ground there. But, yeah, there are definitely reports of just how severe this has been and will be in China. I mean, lots of speculation about how many years it might take to recover.
If we lose half of that sow herd in China, years is the right timeline. I just don't know how many years are on that timeline to get the recovery back. What's your thoughts there?
Well, we've been trying to struggle. We've looked at various scenarios ourselves. We don't pretend to know which one is the most likely to actually occur. I mean, some of what we've seen already and what's in USDA's own projections kind of makes sense. With less production of pork in China already and in front of us, we're going to see higher prices, not just for pork, but for all the meats in China. That results in increased incentives to produce beef and chicken and everything else, other proteins as well in the country, and increases the demand for imports, not just of pork, but also beef and chicken. And all those things seem to be happening. But the real question is, in my mind, A, how big is the production effect, short run and long run? And what's going to happen to consumption in China? You know, consumption right now appears to be squeezed pretty hard.
Yeah, yes, it does. Yes, it does. Let's go back to the 78 cents per bushel impact that FAPRI has concluded, impact on soybeans. What that number was available to USDA chief economist Robert Johansson when they were figuring out the MFP payment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And, of course, it's important to remember that the way they calculated the MFP payments was not based on an estimated market price impact. It was based on the value of lost sales to the affected markets. And while you might think that's a similar thing, it's actually a very different way of measuring stuff.
Explain that, please.
Yeah, so as I understand things, and again, you should get this verified by folks at USDA,
sure,
the lawyers there told them that they couldn't really compensate farmers directly for lower prices, but they could compensate them for lost trade. So they took the value of what was expected to be our lost sales to China and other markets with retaliatory tariffs, divided that by the amount of production we have in the country, multiplied by a price, and voila, you got $1.65 a bushel for the first round of payments and whatever the magic number was for this new round of payments.
Gotcha.
And so the actual analysis that they would have looked at our numbers, but I think they actually used a different model in doing their own estimates for the first round of payments. And frankly, that model and our model were relatively similar in our effects on both trade and on prices. Okay. So it's really not a fundamental difference in the models. It's more difference in the approach that was used to determine the payment rates. So while that was a beneficial thing for soybeans in terms of getting a higher payment rate than we would have had otherwise if it was just a price-based thing, it did mean that we didn't get a very large payment for corn the first time around.
Right.
Because our analysis here did show, you know, just if you look only at the soybean tariff all by itself,
yep.
you know, that alone was going to result in some noticeable increase in corn prices if the tariff went away, just because of cross-price effects with soybeans.
Right. Right. Wow. Okay. I keep saying $7.25 billion. I'm assuming that the first half of the payment is coming sometime the end of August, first part of September. That's quite an infusion. What kind of an impact does that have on the ag industry?
Well, it's definitely a positive compared to not having it, no question about it. You know, we have a lot of folks in significant financial stress right now, and those additional dollars will be very welcome by a lot of folks. You know, I don't think this, by any stretch of the imagination, this means good times are here again. It just means that things aren't as bad as they would have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a similar question to what I asked Chris and Ryan and from INTL FC Stone. Is trade the answer? If we can fix our trade problems, is that what puts us on the next leg up in the ag economy?
It's definitely a place to start. I mean, you know, as we showed, just one tariff alone, you know, we were estimating $4 billion just from that one tariff alone, and that's not everything else that's in the mix. But we got to be clear, there's other things that are making life difficult in agriculture right now. Even if our tariff problems all went away tomorrow, you know, ASF is still out there, for example. That's going to reduce the soybean market for quite some time to come.
Dr. Westhoff, it sounds, and I know you weren't listening, but it sounds like you were listening to Chris, because he started off with it's a step in the right direction, and he went to ASF. This ASF thing is not getting enough attention.
I agree.
In the overall impact on what's happening to our markets. And, you know, some of that, I'll take some of the blame on that, because we need to focus more on it and the overall impacts. But, you know, how many times can you say, doggone it, you know, we might lose up to half of the sow herd in China. That's going to have an impact. I don't know. It's kind of a difficult scenario. So obviously we can't go over and fix their ASF problems. What can we do here domestically to help our ag economy?
Well, on ASF, one thing that we have to do is make sure it doesn't come here. And I know that everybody is taking as many steps as possible to try to prevent that from happening, but it's hard to overstate how catastrophic it would be if we were to have an outbreak in this country as well. But again, in general, you know, part of it is making sure we have a good growing economy and that we don't do other things to, you know, to make life more complicated for ourselves. But we also are going to be at the mercy of weather, as we always have been and always will be in agriculture.
Yep. Yep. So the odds are we're going to have lower interest rates from the Fed after they wrap up the FOMC meeting tomorrow. Does lower interest rates have much impact on the ag economy right now?
It'll make a small difference. I don't think it's a huge make or break sort of thing. If it does make the dollar a bit weaker, for example, that will, you know, actually help a little bit with exports. It's not a huge deal, but it's better than nothing. Likewise, you know, again, people who have to refinance or want to buy that new piece of machinery, if you can shave a little bit off the interest you've got to pay, that's not a bad thing. But we shouldn't pretend that a quarter point difference in the Fed funds rate is going to make, you know, make life a completely different agriculture. I don't think that'd be expecting too much of a small thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Westhoff. Really appreciate the time and obviously appreciate the insights into what this all means for us going down the road. Thank you so much.
Thank you much. Take care.
You bet. You bet. That is Dr. Pat Westhoff from the University of Missouri. Pat is the director of the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute, what we know as FAPRI. You know, Davis.
Yeah.
The similarities between what Dr. Westhoff and what Chris Narayanan were, you know, said there about how we restart this ag economy, the similarities were a little scary.
They really were. Wow. But, you know, maybe we're all kind of getting on the same page here, and that's a pathway to a solution.
Amen. Good thought right there. Yep. Good thought. Let's revisit that thought when we come back and wrap up all this right. week. And plus, let's do something that we like to call Powered by Pro Farmer next on AgriTalk.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Wiffles Hybrids invites you to imagine that you're buying a new car. Are you more likely to get a nicer car if you buy it from A, a potato chip company that also makes cars, B, a pain cream company that for some reason also makes cars, or C, a car company? Did you pick C? Of course you did. Now just apply the same logic the next time you purchase seed corn. Wiffles Hybrids, seed corn, and nothing else.
Here's John Deere agronomist Yancey Wright.
Today we're going to talk a little bit about the importance of courting good field data and how you can use that information to make both agronomic decisions and also decisions that can impact your profitability. I'm going to start by going through an example of where having good information about your yield potential spatially in the field can help you make decisions about your seeding rate. We recently did a literature review looking at yield response to seed rate in canola, and what we found was that if you look across a lower yielding environment, we're talking areas of the field that are 30 bushels per acre or lower in canola, had a much higher response to seed rate as the seed rate went up. So what we found was if you went up 2 or 3 pounds per acre in your seed rate in canola, that resulted in as much as 5 and 6 bushel per acre increase in yield potential. So if you think about that from an economic standpoint, if you have 20% of your acres in that lower yielding environment, you're a 5,000 acre farm, that could be $25,000 to $30,000 of total gross profit increase that you have by just making the decision of what your seed rate ought to be in those lower yielding environments. So there's an example of how good yield data and understanding where those yield potential zones are can help you make better decisions about your seed inputs. The other thing to consider is how you can utilize this recorded data through the Operations Center and utilize some of our connected software tools to understand parts of the field where your cost of production are higher than the revenue that part of a field generates. Secondly, tools like JD Link and wireless data transfer make it easier than ever to make sure you get good data from the field to your operations center where they could be utilized to work with connected software tools and also do some analysis through Field Analyzer. And to help you with that, go see your John Deere dealer. For John Deere, my name is Yancey Wright and this has been Lead TV.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
The 2019 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour is coming soon. Kicking off August 19th, watch for extensive coverage on air and online. The premier sponsor of Crop Tour is Pioneer, with support from IBM, RCIS, RAM, AeroVironment, Titan Tires, and Farm Credit Services of America. Love that thought you had, Davis.
Yes. Yes.
Consensus on the problems, consensus on the path to recovery, that puts us on that path on that we need to get on. There are a few items that are on that path, and you just got to start checking them off,
right,
to get down the path of recovery for the ag industry. I like it. And ASF, what a huge challenge to overcome. It's just it's daunting trying to figure it out in how not only the Chinese are going to overcome that problem, but how we replace that demand globally.
Right.
Globally, how we replace that demand.
Well, yeah, and you were talking about doing a little Powered by ProFarmer. I went back and looked at ProFarmer's first thing today. And
of course.
Where they confirm Rabobank forecasts ASF could cut China's hog herd in half by the end of 2019. Right. Half of what? Kind of is my question. Half of what's left or half of what they started with? These numbers are going to be super tricky to nail down, and that just makes it super tricky to nail down the actual market impacts of ASF over there.
It looks like we're going to have somebody from Rabo on the show on Thursday.
Okay.
Thursday morning to
good deal.
Talk about that report, and we'll answer that question. Half of what? So that's a good question.
Yep.
The other one in this morning's Pro Farmer, you know what? I was making notes and I lost track of what I was thinking about. So there is another item. Oh, I know what it is. Pat Westhoff, Dr. Westhoff was talking about how Brazilian and U.S. soybean prices have come closer together.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. As China issues waivers from tariffs for U.S. bean purchases, that spread will narrow, and it should narrow completely.
Okay.
And get down to freight differences.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
To determine which freight and currency differences.
Well, and let's see, because I was writing about this for a landowner, and I mentioned it once before. Spoiler alert. it's tricky here, but let's see. Here we go. During 2017, this is according to ERS, USDA's Economic Research Service, hauling soybeans by truck from northern Mato Grosso to the Brazilian port of Paranagua cost $93 per metric ton. Meanwhile, transporting soybeans from Davenport, Iowa to the Gulf of Mexico by truck, rail, and barge, $65 per metric ton, $28 less, and then to send it from Sioux Falls, South Dakota out of the PNW, $68 per ton. So wherever you send it from the United States, even if it is that intramodal kind of transport that you've got to do, you're still substantially cheaper than that $93 that they posted in.
$93 per metric ton is like $2.50 a bushel.
Yeah. Yeah. That adds up.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, does that add up. That adds up in a hurry. One other item in Pro Farmer's first thing today, since we're doing the Powered by Pro Farmer, USMCA vote by October. Now, they were working, and you included some of this in the news, and this is according to Axios, a news service.
Yep.
But evidently, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin got House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to say, okay, listen, I got to get this budget deal done. And in return, Mnuchin got Pelosi to say, yes, we will vote on USMCA in October or by October.
By October, yep.
By October. I don't mind seeing that. That's deal making.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Pelosi denies it, and she hasn't put anything in writing. But if she made that deal and doesn't follow through, Mnuchin can make life really rough on Pelosi.
Yeah, yeah. So well, I wonder what the denial is about. I wonder what the denial is about.
Lining up her party. You know, she needs a little bit of time to get everybody lined up and on board with that deal that she made is what I would say it probably is. So it's interesting. It's interesting. And like I said, politics is the art of cutting the deal.
Right.
And so a little bit of deal making, a little bit of negotiation, a little bit of compromise here, a little bit of compromise there. Yeah. I am not against that. Matter of fact, I'm kind of all for it in this environment. Let's go ahead and get it done.
Well, and I do agree. You know, I think part of what she's dealing with there, it almost seems like there's something of a mutiny brewing in the Democrat Party. And
definitely.
The winds of change are blowing there, and I'm not sure if they blow themselves out or if it, you know, if there is a fundamental shift coming ahead here for Pelosi and for the rest of the Democratic Party as some of these younger members move in and capture more attention.
Yeah, you've got a very small but very loud and influential group that is, they may not be driving the boat, but they've got their hand on the steering wheel.
Right.
Along with Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
And they are quite obviously having an influence on the decision-making process.
For sure. It'll be interesting to see if more people cut from that same cloth are voted in 2020. That could get dicey.
It'll also be interesting to see if the, as they call themselves, the squad, can get reelected.
Right.
Because the competition is stacking up and stacking up pretty quickly. There's no question about
Gotta
that.
Wonder who put those turtles on their posts.
Yeah, wait,
did I say that?
All right, thank you so much for listening today. Thanks to Chris and Ryan and to Pat Westhoff for joining us today. You got to come back this afternoon. We're going to talk with Bob Utterback from Utterback Marketing Services, and tomorrow morning we've got Congressman Rodney Davis and a farmer forum right here on AgriTalk.
They're not the type to ask for help, the ones who beat the sun to their workday. But after floods erased generations of farmland, livestock, and crops, that resolve was shaken. It's time to show our farmers and ranchers that when waters rise, so do good people. Maybe they won't ask for help, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't answer. Donate to our farmers and ranchers at staystrongnebraska.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
And then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.